Rabbi Vered Harris is a spiritual leader of Temple B'nai Israel up the street on Penn. She is the fifth rabbi who served there since its founding in 1903. Before that, she served for 12 years as the education rabbi at Congregation Beth Torah of Oberlin Park. She has extensive background knowledge in adult, family, and youth education, and her interests are in women's studies, first century history, contemporary poetry, creative expressions. She also has great concerns for civil and human rights, especially in the LGBT community. And she has concerns for young women and girls, both domestically and abroad. She received her master's degree in Hebrew letters and her rabbinic ordination from Union College, the Jewish Institute of Religion. She has lived many places, including Israel, California, Germany, Ohio, and Kansas, and now Oklahoma City. And she lives here with her husband, Benjamin, and their three children. Will you please help me to welcome Rabbi?
I want to say thank you to your church family and to Reverend Force for welcoming me here this morning. And although Lisa Wolf wasn't able to be here today, I appreciate her inviting me here to talk about being a Jew among Christians. It seems to me that this topic, or the big question, is when should I let myself stand out as a Jew among Christians? So scene one, at the mall with my teenage daughter. A very helpful salesman had a noticeable tattoo across his forearm. It quoted from the Song of Songs in Hebrew, "I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine, Anila Dodi Vidodi Li." I read it and smiled and said, "Anila Dodi Vidodi Li, I love that book." He asked, "You can read Hebrew?" "I can." "That's so cool." So from my study, the song is probably from around the 3rd century before the Common Era. The language is poetic, but it's not cryptic. It is loving, it is romantic, and it is erotic. The song does not mention God, it does not talk about religious law, and it seems pretty focused on two people experiencing each other without regard to a higher purpose. Early rabbinic justification for including the song in the Bible is that the main characters represent God and the deep abiding relationship with the Jewish people. Let me put emphasis on that sentence and the word justification. The Christian church extended the rabbinic interpretation as a relationship between the church and God, or even Jesus. For obvious reasons, the Christian interpretation is not foremost in my mind, and I think that it's beautiful that "I am my beloved and my beloved is mine" is a common biblical quote engraved on wedding rings and used in marriage ceremonies. So, not thinking about the larger theological pieces of the quote, I asked the next logical question: does your partner have the same tattoo? "Oh no, I'm single." This is a reminder to me of Jesus' love. So as a Jew facing a Christian with a Hebrew tattoo on his arm, what should I say? Inside, I feel like my text, and come to temple sometime when I'm teaching Song of Songs, I actually do think that that's my text. I feel like my text has been co-opted. But outside, you know, I smile and nod. This is his faith, and it's his truth. And while I'm happy to have a dialogue, this was not the time or the place. And you know what? There was no reason for me to speak. It's conclusion of scene one. Sometimes there is no reason to stand out as a Jew among Christians. Scene two. The Supreme Court rules in favor of marriage equality. I was away at as faculty at a Jewish overnight summer camp for kids when I heard the news. In the staff lounge with teenage and young adult counselors and staff, I sat and with them cried. The Reform Movement of Judaism used to say that we favor marriage equality as an issue of civil rights, but we did not call for same-sex relationships to be considered as religiously sanctified. Now, this has changed, and the most recent responsum on the issue explains how same-sex relationships can be sanctified through religious marriage. Hold that for a second, and let me explain something else from Judaism. Interfaith marriage, regardless of the sex of the two partners, is not considered to be, in the religious legal term of Judaism, sanctified. Two Jews get married regardless of sex, and it is sanctified. A Jew and a non-Jew get married regardless of sex, and the legal status, and it is a legal status in Judaism, of sanctification is not reached. So because of the sanctification issue, which is a religious legal classification, rabbis can refuse to officiate at interfaith weddings. Even though interfaith weddings are completely legal in the United States, no one can force a rabbi to break from their religious convictions. So at camp, staff and campers as young as 9 years old clapped and cheered when we heard the news. And I'm proud of the Reform Movement for signing Friend of the Court briefs and various hearings over the past years. Proud that my children are growing up in a world that in this way is better than the one that I knew at their age. I'm proud that my religious truths of dignity of people, God's creations, and the sanctification of partnership are moving toward being the truth of our nation. Your rainbow message, or your rainbow banner, and your message that God is still speaking that you've had outside your church, you may not know the way that that affects people, but it has bolstered me personally many times driving down Pennsylvania Avenue. We spoke up about marriage equality. Our voices were heard. Then Governor Fallon signed a bill to protect ministers from having to officiate at same-sex weddings. What a waste of ink and paper. Amen. As any rabbi can tell you, you don't have to officiate at anything that goes against your religious beliefs. It is infuriating to see protections for religious beliefs that don't need to be protected and which my faith sees as sanctified unions. In the scripture we read this morning, the Moabite king Balak saw the brutality of what the Israelites did to the Amorites in war. And when they showed up in his land and had so many that they covered the earth, he got nervous. So he called the prophet Balaam or Balaam to curse them. And every time Balaam opens his mouth, God causes him to bless the people that Balak intended to curse. What doesn't Balak do? He doesn't talk to anyone. He's afraid of the Israelite power, but he doesn't ask them about their intentions. He saw with the war with the Amorites, But he doesn't ask what it was about or try to understand what happened. He stands at a distance and decides that he understands the situation so well that there's no doubt in his mind he's right and the Israelites must be destroyed. I suspect that, like me, you know what it's like to have someone hate you based on distant observations and assumptions without rational interaction. We have that human thing going on. Conclusion, scene two. Sometimes religious truths will make me stand out as a Jew among some Christians, but it also allows me to stand alongside other Christians with whom we share a pursuit of what Jews call mercy and justice. Scene three. It's complicated. Israel is personal. Last week, the United Church of Christ General Synod voted to join the Boycott, Divest, Sanction movement against Israel. It's called BDS for short. Two of the points of what the UCC General Synod promotes in the resolution are to study the Kairos Palestine 2009, a moment of truth, a word of faith, hope, and love from the heart of Palestinian suffering, and to divest from companies that profit from Israeli security measures and boycott products produced by Israeli companies in the West Bank or Palestine. From a Jewish perspective, the Kairos 2009 Palestine document delegitimizes Israel's right to exist as a Jewish democratic state. As people deeply tied to the existence of Israel, and I say this personally because I would not be alive, not colloquially, but literally, if not for the land and the state of Israel. This delegitimization of Israel's right to exist and the Jewish people having a homeland that is Jewish and democratic, this cuts at the core of our identity. A close reading of boycott and divestment of the actual documents put out by the BDS movement out of Palestine, a close reading of that document through a Jewish lens, renders a call for an increase of terror attacks in Israel by reducing security, and it calls for punitive measures against people who work in the West Bank and Palestine, which includes Palestinians working for Israeli companies, bringing home paychecks to support their families in a horribly crippled and sadly suffering economy. It makes that call apparently based only on the experiences of those creating the document, but without talking to the people who are employed in those places. And without any acknowledgement of the many NGOs that are actively working on the ground to effect a change that is positive for Palestinians and Israelis together to stand, if not side by side, then at the very least face to face, to converse, to get to know one another and each other's struggles. The Central Conference of American Rabbis, which is the rabbinic organization for Reform rabbis in the United States, Reform Judaism being the largest expression of Judaism in the United States and the movement of which I am a part, the Central Conference of American Rabbis released a statement on Wednesday in response to the UCC vote. I'm not going to read the whole thing. Some of the language is very harsh, but in part, the statement says, "With sadness and dismay, we condemn the action of the United Church of Christ to target Israel with divestment and boycotts. With this vote, the UCC has now taken sides in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and has explicitly joined the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, a contemptible effort to delegitimize the state of Israel and deny the Jewish people's right to statehood. We do thank and commend the small, brave minority of delegates to the UCC General Synod who voted against the wrongful, self-defeating resolution. Reform rabbis are particularly saddened by this development because of the long-standing and meaningful relationships that many of us in our communities have cherished. Like our UCC colleagues, Reform rabbis are deeply engaged with the plight of the Palestinians, and we strongly support the peace process to achieve two states for two peoples. When I read the entirety of the statement, but including those two pieces, what I hear is, we're standing in front of you. Why not talk to us before joining those who want to curse us? And that's where I stand, which is, where do I stand as a Jew in front of Christians, and so distinctively feel that I stand out? There's only one thing that I can see for me to live authentically as a Jew among Christians, and that is to be continually open to dialogue. To remember the injunction to love the stranger and not to treat others how I don't want to be treated. It's hard not to be angry and hurt about BDS, not to feel outraged by what I see as propaganda and misrepresentations being adopted by my neighbors as truths because they sound good to be called pursuits of peace. When my defenses go up because I think my text is misunderstood, or I clench up because I fear my religious teachings will be restricted with legislation, or I clam up because the founders of BDS call for the destruction of the Jewish state of Israel, because I strive to have a religious response, to be better as a human, I have to say, Hineni Muchan Umzuman, here I am, ready, inviting the conversation. With that, as a Jew among Christians, I am grateful for my neighbors who are willing to do the same. Thank you.